Lecture 28, Ideology of Empire.
We have seen Mesopotamian kings portrayed in several ways: as hero, shepherd, lawgiver, divine, a warrior, equal with rulers in other states. And Assyrian leaders shared many of these qualities that we've discussed already. But we can isolate specific features that are unique to Assyria, Assyrian kings. No previous culture promoted the idea that the ruler embodied the state in the way that the Assyrians did. Much of the surviving evidence was either originally displayed in official or royal settings or authored by the king. So this naturally skews our view towards the king. We don't have as much archaeological evidence for small towns or urban neighborhoods for the Assyrian period as in previous eras. And remember that archaeologists found the palaces of the Assyrian kings first, so that has been the focus of much of our investigation and continuing research. Even if we compensate for this bias, the king still is the focal point of the state. So any analysis of ideology of Assyrian culture or political beliefs centers on him. We will also survey the army, which played a major role in the spread of the Assyrians. We've encountered some memorable texts and images that describe the army already, and this fits well into the interpretation that's generally accepted, that the representations of violence that the Assyrians created were intended to frighten enemies into submission and to keep any potential rebels loyal. The attention to detail given in the sculpture also gives us evidence for weaponry, military technology, and other tactics used by the Assyrian army at this time. Before turning to the king, it will be helpful to understand the way that the Assyrian Empire was envisioned. Originally, in the Middle Assyrian period, the king ruled the land of Ashur, which was both the god and its capital city. This goes back to the old idea of a city belonging to a god. But the relationship was intensified because there were no other temples in Ashur. Remember that in the era of the city-state, there was one patron deity who protected the city, but there were many other temples, and many other temples and cults that were also worshipped at the same time. When the ambition and the success of the Assyrian kings increased, for example, in the era of Shalmaneser III, Ashur became a national god, but he retained the character of the city god. He needed to be fed, clothed, housed, but on a much larger scale because he was protecting many more people and much more land. So the tribute that the Assyrian kings imposed was for Ashur, and it was described as belonging to him, sacred. Often it was imposed on goods in kind. So, for example, food, clothing, labor, livestock, everything needed to feed and make Ashur comfortable. This area, the land of Ashur, in the Middle Assyrian period, corresponded to roughly the area of northern Mesopotamia. As the state grew, it had another term for describing the greater extent of the empire, and these were the lands under the yoke of Ashur. The lands to the west, for example, which were administered by provincial governors. This significant tribute that began to be levied on them was not to provide for the god Ashur, but instead for his human representative, the king. Often, this tribute is the costlier and more exotic goods, horses, gold, silver, ivory, those apes that came from Phoenicia, these were destined for the king. What was most important in this understanding of how the lands under the yoke of Ashur were conceived was the steady supply of tribute, not the land itself.